So, I must admit that I might not look like it, but I'm really a geek. I'm a complete geek. I actually my idea of bed table reading is neuroscience books, and I have a whole bunch of them. And I was reading this one that's very good by a neuroscientist called Incognito, very good book. And he was talking about referring to all these wonderful perceptual clinical studies that show just how blind we are to change. It turns out they do these studies where they'll have an unsuspecting person walking across some lawn or whatever on some sidewalk, and somebody will come up and ask them what time it is. And as the person looks down, they'll have two people carrying something walk in between the test subject and the person who's asked what time it is, briefly blocking the view, and they'll switch out, so there'll be an entirely different person there when the object goes through, and no one notices. They did this test where they will put occasionally in movies, they'll literally change the lead actor that you've been watching, and just for a moment switch them out, edit out somebody completely differently. Nobody will notice. They've done this test over and over again. There's this wonderful one, I can't remember if it's Yale that did this test, where they have people, they ask you to watch a video, and they say, can you count how many times the people in this video bounce the basketball? And I took this test, and I was counting. And then when the video's over, you think they're going to ask you how many times did the basketball bounce, but instead they say, what did the person in the gorilla outfit do? And you go, and you, well, not maybe you, but I was like, the gorilla outfit? And I rewound the QuickTime video, and sure enough, in between the four people bouncing the ball, a person in a gorilla outfit walks into the middle of them, stands in the center of the fucking video, and waves, and then walks off. And apparently, fewer than 10% of the people watching this video notice somebody in a gorilla outfit. It's astonishing. And the tests go on and on and on. And basically, what it is we have what's known as change blindness. The mind, there's this wonderful Russian scientist named Alfred Yarblov, who basically, I think that's what his name was, who basically put little sensors on people's eyes and saw or could measure where they moved their eyes. And it turns out in situations that are new, we don't move all around and see everything. We just go to a few spots. And from that, we construct an entire sense of what reality looks like. And we really don't devote anywhere near as much attention as we thought to people, to places, to things. It's sort of staggering when you look at the results of his test, just how little we actually see of the world. Just little bits, and then the mind is constructing the rest out of expectation. The idea is the mind finds it actually more interesting to go into what neuroscientists call the default mode network, which means self-centered thoughts. The mind prefers to, whenever possible, to let go of thinking about other people in the world and what's going on, and to focus on, well, me. What's going on with me? How have I been? What's going to happen to me? And unfortunately, this tendency causes an enormous amount of stress. The parts of the brain that think about me, that worry about me, that get caught up in self-centered thoughts, are what's known as the ventral media access, and that directly triggers the release of cortisol. Because when we're lost in thought about ourselves, the body, doesn't feel particularly safe. It knows that we're not aware of the world and what's going on around us. It knows that we're, in essence, vacant. The lights are on, but nobody's home. We're thinking about the future, the past, what somebody said, what's going to happen, why did I say that? And so the body becomes stressed out. So we have what's known as change blindness. But then on top of that, we have something else. It's called denial. And that is suffering blindness. We don't see, and there's this wonderful clinical book called The Happiness Hypothesis that goes over all the different ways that people are blind to the areas in life where we're causing ourselves suffering. The endeavors that we keep on going towards, expecting it to be the thing that brings us lasting fulfillment and happiness, that consistently disappoints us, that makes us feel frustrated. For example, in our society, there's an enormous amount of emphasis upon, well, in New York, it's the jobs, right? Everybody knows somebody who professes to have the greatest job ever. Oh, I'm a stylist at some magazine. I get to travel the world and see the greatest people and the coolest thing and parties. And I'm just so fulfilled, you know, and just go, oh my God, I'm such a failure. It went wrong. Where did I open up the wrong doorway and walk through? Oh my God, I blew it. And then on top of that, well, we might not feel that, but maybe there's the people that are just, I'm a sexual being. Sex is how I express myself. Sex is the thing that gives me my life, everything. You know, and you enjoy sex, and it's great, but you're like, well, it's wonderful, but then it's over, you know? And this, the other 23 and a half hours, it's really answering everything for you? And then you run into the person with the baby. My child is answering everything for me. I'm so glad I had my child. It's like my life didn't have meaning, and now I'm totally fulfilled all the time. So we're constantly being told that there's this thing out there that's going to be the answer. It's never inside. It's always my journal, my book, my blog, my baby, my booze, my this, my that, that's going to, and we just haven't found it. And we keep going back. We keep going back because other people are professing to have found lasting happiness there. And you know what? They're mostly delusional. Because even if for a little while a job or sex or, you know, writing or whatever it is that's external brings some nice fulfillment, it's not going to be the lasting answer because jobs are going to go away. There's going to come a time when we're all going to face that time when we're not going to be able to do our jobs or where there's going to be times when we're not as alluring as we were when we were young and beautiful. If we have kids, they're going to grow up and they're going to go away and they're probably going to be like me when I was 15. They'll come home one day, they're going to have a mohawk and they're going to say, fuck you, no matter how good a parent you've been. And you're going to be staring there at that kid with the green mohawk who's addicted to drugs and you're going to be like, you were supposed to be the answer. Oh my God. I still feel for my poor mom. So, there's nothing wrong with these things. The Buddha didn't say to give up any of these things. But when we bring this incredible sense of pressure, this has got to be it, then we deny when we're not getting what we need from it. We keep going back because everybody else is saying, well, yeah, I'm, you know, my job, that's the thing. That's what's giving me my life meaning. So we keep going back, hoping that it'll somehow, if I approach it differently. And when we don't notice change, one day we wake up and something that's been incrementally changing before our eyes, like our youth or our whatever, suddenly it's totally different. I read this study that most people have an image of themselves in their head, even though we see ourselves in the mirror probably every day. We still carry around most of the time an image of ourselves as being far younger than we actually are. So one day we wake up and we're like, ah! I got old. Holy shit. My friends got old. And this job really sucks. And my kid, oh my God, has got like a, you know, a mohawk. When did that happen? And all of a sudden, you know, I'm not getting it from this stuff. So the point of spiritual practice is giving us a really safe inner place that gives us ground so that we can see clearly what's actually going on in our lives, where we're overbalanced, where we're trying to get lasting happiness from things that are not meant to give us lasting happiness. If I've got a really truthfully soft core that I'm working on daily that is peaceful and can be with any experience, then I can really turn with an honest appraisal to my life, and I can see, like, have I been going into relationships trying to, you know, even though I don't acknowledge it to myself, am I going into relationships trying to make the relationship the thing that makes me feel good? Or am I going into each piece of art that I'm making, or each job, or each new friend? Am I going in with this agenda, this emotional agenda that can't be met? Even more importantly, though, there's the really seeing and being with the discomforts in life, the sense of getting older, aging, the sense of mortality, the sense of being around people that we love that are growing older, that are or are sick, or are people who are doing things that are deeply disappointing to us. If we have a soft inner place that we can keep and sustain peace, then we can be with things and we can say, how can I be with this? Rather than denying it or running away from it or trying to push it away or trying to drink until it goes away or use until it goes away or jump into another, you know, relationship or sex endeavor or another project, trying to not acknowledge the suffering in our lives, the disappointments with things. We can really be with stuff that's really, really difficult. And there is going to be a lot of difficulty in life. The Buddha said that the first noble truth is that we're all going to grow old, we're all going to experience sickness, we're all going to die, we're all going to not get things that we want at times, and get things that we don't want. We're going to be around people that we don't particularly like, and we're going to be separated from people that we love. That's what's going to happen, no matter how good a life you lead. And rather than try to figure out what's the one thing that I can grab onto that won't allow me to experience this stuff, we can actually be with it. It's a funny thing. I remember once a monk telling me that we start off, was Ajahn Sucitto, he said that we start off as babies, and the first thing we do as babies is, there's only two things we know to do inherently as human beings, which is we feed off of our mother's breast, and we cling. That's it. We cling and feed. I would argue shit, too, but we cling and feed, and we bring this pattern into the entire adult lives, feeding off of things that we think will fill us up, and clinging so that to things that we think will make us lastingly safe and secure. There is nothing that will make us lastingly safe and secure, or at least externally, there's nothing that will make us lastingly safe and secure from old age, sickness, death, disappointment, frustration, a sense of being lost, a sense of confusion with what's it all about, why am I here? All this stuff will happen. But the good news is that rather than Buddhism or spiritual practice being this nihilistic thing where we just say, oh, fuck it, I'm just going to fall into disappointment. Just be with it, man up. I'm going to man up. It sucks. With my cigar, my bourbon. You know, like a sergeant in a World War II film. Listen, buddy, when you've been here as long as I have, you know that it all sucks. That's not what spiritual practice is, it turns out. It turns out that it's actually about first relaxing and making the body as comfortable a vessel as it can be, so that no matter what arises in life, we can have something that's sustaining. And rather than get caught up in the stories with, I can't believe that this job sucks, this relationship is not the answer, this my art is not the answer, whatever, we can enjoy those things as much as they can. And when frustration and disappointment arises, instead of being caught up in the story, we can feel the feelings, be with the disappointment, really honor the disappointment by being with it, not in this fuzzy story, but really in what the energy that each disappointment takes up. Because everything that we experience in life that's important has a physical, somatic, deep energy that's asking to be felt. And when we finally get past the feeling of loss and disappointment, that's a story, and we go into the body, if we've worked with the body and we've kept it, we've developed peace, a place that we can really find refuge in it, then we can allow the stress and the sadness to arise. Because the body will be big enough and it can handle it. It can allow disappointment to arise and pass. It can be with all kinds of things that we didn't believe we could be with. Part of the core of addiction and the core of bad habits that we fall into is this idea that I can't be with these feelings. I need to make them go away. I can't be with this. I've got to drink until I don't feel this sense of shame or disappointment or embarrassment or anger. I can't be with this stuff, so I've got to make it go away. And we actually can. But if you wait until the real big disappointments hit, it's going to be pretty overwhelming. That's why we practice again and again and again, keeping the body calm, being at ease in our own skin, being peaceful with ourselves, thinking skillfully peaceful thoughts like, may I be peaceful, rather than allowing the mind to go again and again and again to the thoughts about the future, what it thinks is going to happen, or the past, or worries. We keep bringing the thoughts again and again to, may I be peaceful, may the people around me be peaceful, may I feel comfortable, may I be at ease. Eventually these practices create such a vessel of comfort that the mind is no longer shrunk into these thoughts. The mind is now carrying around, or not carrying around, the mind is actually not up here, but it's in the body so much more of the day that when frustration happens, rather than run from it, or not see the changes in life that we don't want to see, we can actually open up and we can say, oh my God, I am getting older. I only got a few, you know, a limited amount of time here. I'm really going to acknowledge that. I'm going to see that. I'm going to focus on the things that bring me a realistic amount of happiness, knowing too that I have this peace within. We stop clinging at the world for that lasting security, and we find it that was here all along. Once we have it here, then we don't go into relationships with this unconscious fix me, fix me, fix me. You know, say you love me, please, one more time. That's what a mind that's truly balanced is like. So, I think that's enough for tonight's talk. I'd like to hear from what's going on with you. I thank you for listening. And the idea...